Attention tonight to the Gospel of John. The Gospel of John. Thank you, sir. I want you to go to chapter 21. And I'm going to preach tonight on breakfast with Jesus. Breakfast with Jesus. Breakfast could be my favorite meal of the day. I like breakfast. I can skip lunch. And I can nibble for supper if I have to. A few nights ago, there wasn't a whole lot to eat at the house, and me and a can of Vienna sausage got along just fine. But I like breakfast if I can get it. And I can't think of any breakfast that would be any more enjoyable than to have breakfast with Jesus. And tonight, I want us to look at a chapter that is one of my favorite. It could be my favorite in the whole New Testament. There was such a conviction from this chapter during my junior year. Actually, I'd just finished my junior year in high school. And I was at a summer camp, and I heard an evangelist named Wayne Swearingen. He was a youth evangelist. And he preached out of John 21, "Lovest thou me?" That's the second half of the chapter. I'm not preaching on that tonight. I'm using the first half. But there was something about that message that just captivated me. And my life has never been the same since I heard that man preach that message. Really, I guess it was the summer of 73. And so I have often camped out in this chapter. And this afternoon, I was going through it again, and I guess I began to think about my experience, but then I began to put myself in the position of some of the people in the book. It's often called a restoration chapter. Now, I'm not going to get into restoration a whole lot tonight because I'm going to be preaching on that on Sunday. But the Lord uses flawed people. And I want you to keep that in mind. There's a poem that I came across, and I want to share this with you. I thought that it was pretty good, and it's a poem that's called "And God Said If." All right? If you never felt pain, then how would you know that I'm a healer? If you never went through difficulty, how would you know that I'm a deliverer? If you never had a trial, how could you call yourself an overcomer? If you never felt sadness, how would you know that I'm the comforter? If you never made a mistake, how would you know that I'm forgiving? And if you were never in trouble, how would you know that I will come to your rescue? If you never were broken, then how would you know that I can make you whole? If you never had a problem, how would you know that I can solve them? If you never had any suffering, then how would you know what I went through? If you never went through the fire, then how would you become pure? If I gave you all things, how would you appreciate them? If I never corrected you, how would you know that I love you? And if you had all power, then how would you learn to depend on me? If your life was perfect, then what would you need me for? Pay close attention to that last little phrase. If your life was perfect, then what would you need me for? When we flawed human beings fail, God is there to pick us up. That's the story that we have in John 21. I want to give you some things that we're just going to walk through the passage tonight. We're going to begin in verse 1, and I'll just, if you want a verse heading, I'll give you some things that you can write down, and we're just going to go through for the next few minutes, and I'm just going to try to unravel some of the things that we have in these verses this evening. After these things, what things? The appearances of the Lord when he came to the upper room. There are some people that think that John 21 was written by somebody other than John. They think that he stopped at verse 31 of chapter 20. I don't buy that, but there's a lot of skeptics that believe that. But it says, after these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. Now, the special place that he is showing himself is a familiar place. Tiberias is the Roman name for the Sea of Galilee, right? There are several names in the Bible for the Sea of Galilee. In the Old Testament, it is called the Sea of Chinnereth. In the New Testament, it is called the Sea of Galilee. It's called the Lake of Gennesaret, and it's also called the Sea of Galilee. And so, this is a very familiar place. The reason it's familiar is because when Jesus began his ministry, this is where he went and began to call his disciples. As a matter of fact, there are men that we're going to look at here in a second, and these fellows were all fishermen from Galilee, around the Sea of Galilee. All right? Now, where do I think this story takes place? I think that it probably takes place around a place called Bethsaida, which is on the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee. Why do I think that? Well, the reason that I think that is because that's where the Zebedee family resided. We have James and John, the sons of thunder. Well, their father, named Zebedee, he had a fishing business. Peter was a part of it. James, John was a part of it. Andrew was a part of it. There were some other men that were fishermen as well. You had Nathaniel and Philip. You had Andrew that was with his brother Peter. And so you had quite a few of the apostles that were fishermen at the beginning. And so that's why I think that they were at that very special place. And if you get a chance at some point in your life to ever go to Israel, one of the most beautiful places that you can ever go to is the Sea of Galilee. I have floated on that sea 3 times now, and I'm telling you, it's beautiful every time you get to go. The first time that I went was with the Christian Jew Foundation, and we were floating out there, and there were some clouds that had come up. And you could almost visualize the stories, how that the disciples were going across the Sea of Galilee, and all of a sudden the storm arose. And as we're on this boat, and the clouds begin to darken, and the wind begins to pick up, you could see the American flag and the Israeli flag popping in the wind. All of a sudden, the boat captain, who was a Christian man, he's a Messianic Jew, he began to play some Christian music. And it was one of those, it was almost a surreal moment. And I got my cell phone out and I began to record. And I still have it to this day. And you can hear the song, and then you can go around and you can see the people that I was taking pictures of on the video as the song was being recorded. And I can still see these people in my mind. I can look at that and say, yeah, that's one of the board members for the Christian Jew Foundation. I look over here and I'm thinking, that was a board member. He got killed by an automobile that he was hit by trying to cross a street about 3 years ago. And I began to just look at these people, and I'm telling you, it was a beautiful, beautiful experience for me, just being on the Sea of Galilee. These men made their living there. And now, they're back. Well, not only do we see the special place, but I want you to notice the special people that are here. Look at verse 2. There were together Simon Peter and Thomas called Didymus. If you do not know this, the word Didymus means the twin. All right? So evidently Thomas had a twin brother. It's interesting the way that they are grouped. Normally, you have Peter and John that are grouped together. But for some reason, Thomas is mentioned next to Peter in this passage. There are some commentators that think because he is next to Peter that he's going to be close, because it seems like that Peter was always wanting to get close to the Lord. We'll see that here again in a moment. And so you've got Thomas, who was not at church on a Sunday night and did not get to see Jesus the first time that he showed up in that upper room, but he was there the next time. And according to some people, the apex of the whole Gospel of John is what the Apostle Thomas said when he looked at Jesus and he said, "My Lord and my God." And when he said that, he was giving everything to him. And so we have Thomas the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, which is James and his brother John, and two other of his disciples. Now, it's interesting that these two disciples are not mentioned. Now, there are some people that they make the assumption that, well, it was probably Philip, because he was from the city of Bethsaida. Then others say that it was probably, the other one was probably Andrew, because he was always with his brother Peter as well. But it does not say that. And there's some great, great Bible people. People like John Phillips and Wiersbe and some of those guys. And they make the statement, they said, that basically what we ought to do is we ought to put you and me in those two spots. Because how often do we fail? How often do we make a mess of some things in our own lives? And yet, when you look at this list, you don't see what I would call super Christians, not yet. J. Vernon McGee calls these men the convention of the problem children. And when you begin to look at them, you find that Peter, he was constantly having foot and mouth disease. When you look at Thomas, he was a doubter. You had Nathanael, who was messing around under a fig tree. And the Lord said, "I saw you under the fig tree." You got James and John, who were pretty much rabble rousers until they got saved. And so you've got a bunch of misfits that really had not yet arrived. They'd just been trained by Jesus for 3 years, but they were a long way from what we would call mature Christians, all right? And so we see that there's some special people. But then look with me at verse number 3. Simon Peter saith unto them, "I go a-fishing." And they say unto him, "We also go with thee." They went forth, entered into a ship immediately, and that night they caught nothing. Now, I want to insert something here. It says that they're going fishing, they're going on the Sea of Galilee, but before they made the trip to the Galilee, where were they at? They were in Jerusalem, and Jesus tells them, the ladies at the resurrection said, "You tell my disciples, I'll meet them in the Galilee." All right? You find that in Matthew chapter 28 or 26, it is. And you find that in Mark chapter 16 in verse number 7, where it says, "He goeth before thee into Galilee." And so keep that in mind. They are where they have been told to go. Now, I have no idea what time has passed from the time that Jesus saw them in that upper room until now. Perhaps it's a week. It's going to take 5 days for them to walk from Jerusalem to the Sea of Galilee. So, maybe they've had a week. Maybe they've had 2 weeks. But one of the things that we know is that they have a problem with patience. If you look at the middle part, Peter says, "I'm going fishing." And they say unto him, "We're going too." Now, Dr. Kenneth Weiss makes this statement. I don't know if I completely agree with it. I used to agree with it, but I've thought through this passage now for four decades. I may be changing my thinking a little bit. He says this. We says that this is a public declaration that I am leaving the ministry and I'm going back to my old fishing business. I don't know if I believe that anymore. And the reason that I don't believe that anymore is because Jesus does not condemn them for going fishing. Why do I think that they were okay with fishing that night? Well, when you don't have any money, you say, well, why would they not have any money? Who had the bag? Judas had the bag. When Judas bailed and committed suicide, he didn't say, Peter, take care of this. They don't have a treasure anymore. Jesus is not there other than the night of the upper room. Jesus is not there to give them food. Now, he's about to here in our story. But these men are basically living the best they can. And so they're back in Bethsaida. They're on the Sea of Galilee. And they begin to think, you know, I mean, who knows when the Lord's going to come? We better get busy doing something. And can I tell you that I don't think that it's wrong for a person to do something secularly until the Lord directs them spiritually? I think that's fine. And so when you look, he says, I go fishing. And so my thinking has really changed. And they say, well, we're going to go with you. And so what did they do? They entered into the ship immediately. And that night, they caught nothing. Now, that's an amazing thing there. Fish run at night on the Sea of Galilee. That sea still has fishermen on it today. You have many of the Jewish men, and they still fish, they still throw nets, and they still fish at night. I have eaten what is called St. Peter's fish, and depending on where you go, it can either be okay or nasty. All right? You just don't know which, all right? I've had both, right? And so fishing was a big deal. Why? Because that is one of the major meats that people would have as far as their diet. So what are they doing? I think they're just trying to make a little bit of walking around money. I think that they're going and they are saying, hey, we know how to fish. But here are these expert fishermen that had been fishing from the time that they were little boys. They have caught nothing all night long. And so, there's a problem with their patience, we see in verse 3. But then in verse 4 and 5, I want you to notice the question that is asked. And I've never seen this before until this afternoon. But when the morning was now come, we know what time of the day it is. There'll be another reason in just a few minutes that you'll see why we know that it's breakfast time, all right? But when the morning was come, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. You say, well, what's the matter with their eyesight? Well, it's early in the morning. When you're looking out, you can't see that far out early in the morning if the haze is still there. And so they don't recognize him. But can I tell you that was not an uncommon thing when people were looking at the resurrected Lord? Were there not two disciples on the road to Emmaus that did not recognize him until he opened the Word of God to them? Did Mary Magdalene not recognize him? She thought that he was the gardener until he said, Mary. And then she knew that it was the Lord. And so you've got these seven men, and they're fishing on probably a good-sized boat. They've got a little skiff behind them. And so they're fishing, they've got the nets, they've caught nothing all night. And so they didn't know that it was the Lord. But in verse 5, Jesus said unto them, "Children, have you any meat?" Now it's interesting, depending on who you read, some people say that the children here has the idea of little ones. But F.F. Bruce makes this statement. He said it would be perfectly appropriate if we would say something like this: "Boys, do you have any meat?" Now, if they did not recognize him, and he says something on the shore, and by the way, they're 100 yards away. You'll see that here in a moment too. And he says, "Hey, boys, do you have any meat?" What were they out there for? Well, I think they were out there trying to catch some fish so that they could take it to the market and try to get some money. And here this guy on the shore is, "Have you got anything?" In other words, they're thinking maybe he's wanting to buy something. And they're going, "No." And they're curt. They're abrupt in their answer. They're ticked off. They've been working all night long. They are at their strength's end. Patience is now gone. And you got some guy on the shore saying, "Hey, have you got anything out there, boys?" And they just bark back the answer, "No." Verse 6, we see some instruction that they're given. "And he said unto them, cast the net on the right side of the ship, and you shall find." And what did they do? "They cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes." 153 big fish. We know the number because the text tells us the number. And so, all night long, professional fishermen. You know, they didn't get dumb with fishing in the 3 years that Jesus taught them. They knew how to do it. But yet, they had not caught a single thing all night long. And here, one fella on the shore says, "Cast the net on the other side of the boat." And when he does, or when they do that, all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, that's something crazy there. About 3 years ago, we went to Mississippi on vacation. We rented a place over near Biloxi. No, we didn't go to the casinos. But we went to this little place, and it was right there on the beach, and it was fun. And one night, me and my son and my grandson and one of his buddies, we went out fishing. And the captain that we had took us out about 20 miles, which I was not thrilled at all about. But I thought, okay, for my grandson, I'm willing to die. So we got out there, and he said, "Now, we're going to fish right under the boat." He said, "It's about 75 feet here." And he said, "The red snappers are right under us." He said, "Have you ever caught red snapper?" "No." He said, "When you set the hook, you got to get on it." He said, "I'm not talking about like catching a bass where you go, you know." He said, "I'm talking about you got to get on it. You can't yank that thing too hard." And so down it went. I mean, literally right under the boat, hanging right off the side. And literally within 30 seconds after you would drop it in, you would feel something go boom, boom, boom. And you would yank on that thing. And we began to reel those red snapper in. And we were only keeping the big ones. You could only have two per person in the boat. That meant that we could get eight. We caught eight red snappers, and every one of them was over 20 pounds. And I'm telling you, it was like when you started pulling it, you got wore out. It was tiring. As a matter of fact, my grandson and his little buddy Noah, they were too weak to get them out of the water. And so these men had caught 153 fish. The net didn't break, but it was like at the breaking point. And so there's a perception that we see. And can I tell you that perception is a beautiful thing? When you have circumstances that come into your life, you need to have perception if this is from God or not. I want you to look with me at verse 7. Therefore that disciple whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, it is the Lord. Peter didn't know it. Nathanael didn't know it. James didn't know it. But John knew it. John seems to have a perception that others do not have. But can I tell you that just because he was the first to perceive, he was not the first to act. There's people that know things, but they don't act on those things. I would rather learn something and act on it than to know something and be idle about it. It's great to know things. It's great to learn new things. I'll give you a funny example. Isabella was going to eat a banana 2 days ago. She had that banana and she was trying to break it open. And I said, Isabu, come here a minute. I said, turn the banana upside down. Well, she didn't turn it upside down. She turned it around. And I said, no, come here. And I said, look, let me hold it a minute. And I said, do it from this end, flip it over from the other end. And I said, now take your fingers and pinch that end and pull. And all of a sudden, they just peeled right open. And I said, you know who taught me to do that? She's just like, mm-mm. I said, I was watching a monkey on television. I saw a monkey peel a banana, and the way that he did it was not from the stem, which is how we normally do it, but it was from the other end, and it just came right open. Now, you're going to try that probably next time you eat a banana. But the point I'm trying to make is that it's great to learn new things, but if we don't act on it, what good is it? You can know the gospel, but if you never acted on it, you're lost. You can know verses in the Bible, but if you never apply them, they've done you no good. You've heard without hearing. And so, what do we find? We find that John perceives, but Peter, when he heard that it was the Lord, he girt or put on his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. Now let me just tell you, when it says he was naked, that does not mean that he was completely without clothes. It meant that he basically had a loincloth on, right? In the old English in the 1600s, naked meant that you know, you were not completely naked. You know, the late Louis Grizzard used to say that there's a difference between naked and naked. And the difference is that naked is when you don't have anything on, and naked is when you don't have anything on and you're up to something. Well, he is not completely naked or naked. He's got a loincloth on, but he doesn't have a shirt on or a fisherman's coat, which was the attire that he would have being from the Galilee. And so you've got him, and he puts his coat on. You would think if he's swimming to the shore, he probably is going to drown. But the thing is, it probably was not that he was swimming as much as he was probably in halfway deep water, and he was probably touching the ground as he was walking. You can go to many, many beaches, and you can go 100, 200 yards out and never get over your head. And so here he is. He is out of the boat. He's going to see the Lord. When he finds out of this, the Lord, he's headed that way. He wants to get close to the Lord again. And so the other disciples, they came in a little ship. Remember I said there was a larger ship, and then there was a smaller one behind them. Why is that? Because the larger ship, the draw on it would not let them get close to the shore. So what they would do is they would just throw an anchor out, and it would be out there where it could still float. And then they would take the little skiff, and then they would begin to pull the nets with that. And that's how they began to come to the shore. And it says that they were 200 cubits out, which is 100 yards, and they were dragging the net with the fishes. And as soon as they were come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, fish laid thereon, and bread. So I want you to notice something else. There was the blessings of obedience that we see in verse 9. What was the blessing? Well, when they got there, it doesn't say anything at all about them taking fish out of the net. That job's not even complete yet. But what they're doing is they're looking and they're seeing a fire of coals, and they have some fish that are laying on those coals already baking and grilling. And it says, not only were the fish there, but there were bread there. Can I tell you, this had to be a time for them to remember? What do you say? What are you saying, preacher? What do you mean a time of remembering? Do you remember the times when Jesus fed the 5,000 men plus the women and children? Do you remember later on when he fed the 10,000 plus the women and the children? What did he do? He would bless the bread. He would bless the fish. And then what he would do was he would have them take up baskets of fragments. Somebody says, well, that's just the same story in different gospels. No, there's different amounts of fragments in both of them. One of them was a bunch of fragments in little baby baskets, and one was big fragments in huge baskets. And so two different times these men saw with their own eyes, and now this third time, Jesus is providing fish and bread for them. Well, how else were they blessed with their obedience? Economically. If you've got 153 pretty good sized fish and you go and sell them, you got a little spending money. And so, what are they doing? They're trying to get them to the shore. And when Jesus shows them the bread and the fish, he says, bring of the fish that you've now caught. Now, he already has fish laid on there. He said, let's look at it. Let's see what you got. I remember my grandfather was an avid fisherman. He was a farmer. He could do electrician work. He could do plumbing work. But his main job, he was a farmer. All right? But the man loved to fish. I remember hearing stories that they'd come by and he'd be out in the field plowing on a little farm all tractor. And they'd walk out there and he'd stop. And somebody'd look at him and say something like this, Pa Hub, why don't we go fishing? He'd say, okay. He turned the tractor off and said, let's go right now. And they'd just go fishing. And I remember as a little man, when he and his buddy Grice would come back, they would have just like a number two wash tub full of fish that they had caught down at the Ojibwe River. And I mean, I used to just be fascinated with the way that they could catch fish. And so I'd always want to look at that. Man, when I'd hear that old Chevrolet truck coming up the road, I was out there waiting just to see what was in the back of it. And so you've got Jesus and he says, bring of the fish. He doesn't need their fish. He's already got his fish. But he says, let's see what you got. So Simon Peter went up. Now remember, these men have brought the net to the shoreline. But when he says, let me see what you got, the next thing you know, old Peter jumps up on the dinghy and he begins to pull that net. And you know, it doesn't say anything about these other guys helping. Maybe they thought, well, we've already done our part, we'll let Peter do his part. But the point is that he got up, he went up in verse 11, drew the net to land full of great fishes, and 153. Can I tell you that God cares about numbers? He cares about every single soul that is saved. He counts people. And can I tell you that there's coming a time when the last person that will be saved, and when that happens, then Jesus is coming. And you and I need to be carriers of the gospel, because everyone matters. And so we see in verse number 12, Jesus saying something to them. What does he say? Come and dine. When you ask somebody to come, you know what you're doing? You're inviting them to come be a part of what you got going on. When I tell somebody, come out to the house, that means that I'm inviting them to come and get to know our family better. Come see us in maybe a more intimate type setting than just in a church service. And so, Jesus says to these men, come. And he's inviting them to a special time of fellowship. But not only does he just say, come and let me just talk to you, but he says, you come and dine. And the word dine here is a Greek word which means the morning meal. This is not lunch. This is not supper. This is morning. They have been fishing all night. They've caught nothing. They've worked and they've worked and they worked, and they are hungry. And now he says, come and dine. Come to the morning meal. And can I tell you this, that the morning times is a really good time to spend time with the Lord. My best times with the Lord are usually morning. Now, sometimes in the evening, if things get quiet at the house or whatever, you know, it's okay. But boy, the quiet mornings, when the sun is first coming up, when you can look out the window and you can see daylight, those are times when it just seems as though that relationship with the Lord, there's something special about it. And so, he says, come and dine. And none of the disciples durst ask him. They didn't dare ask him this, who art thou? Because they knew that it was the Lord. Well, in verse 13, we see that Jesus comes, he took the bread, and he gave it to them, and he gave them the fish also, or gave them fish likewise. Now, the latter part of this chapter is when Peter is restored to his position of leadership. Now, why did he need to be restored publicly? Because he had failed publicly. You remember one of the points that I mentioned about 10 minutes ago, how that there was a time of remembering? In this passage, when they came to the shore and Jesus is cooking those fish, he's cooking those on a fire of coals. When's the last time Jesus in a fire of coals is mentioned in relation to Peter? What you've got is this. You've got Peter, and he's standing there with a fire of coals at Caiaphas's garden as they've arrested Jesus, and they are taking him, putting him into the pit so that they can take him before Pilate when the sun comes up. And so he's there warming himself by the fire of coals. And here he is, he's seeing these fire of coals, and I guarantee you he can't help but think about how that is when he denied the Lord. The other disciples knew it. Everybody knew it. But God had a plan. Jesus had a reason for meeting them on the Sea of Galilee. He wanted to teach them a lesson. Matter of fact, there's many lessons here. We see the hand of God. These men had fished all night long, and yet they had caught nothing. And yet now, by the very word of the Lord Jesus, they catch 153 big fish. You've got fish that are there miraculously that they did not provide. And so these men are learning things. But the one that has to learn something special is the Apostle Peter. And from verse 15 through verse 25, what do you have? You've got Peter being restored to the leadership position. And Peter will be the leader of that early church until the Apostle Paul really becomes the de facto leader once he gets saved about 3 years after Acts chapter 9. And so, when you look at this first part of this chapter, boy, there's a lot of neat things that are there. And I guess if we were going to look at a way to try to make corrections and try to teach people that had problems and people that needed to be restored, I guess that one of the things that we could do like Jesus allowed Peter. He let him dry off. He let him get warm. He fed him good. He let him enjoy some fellowship. And then after that, he looks at him and he says, "Peter, do you love me?" But that's for another time. Let's stand together. Well, I thank you for being here tonight. I hope that you will be safe going home. And I hope that you'll be back Sunday. And I hope that we have a good day in the Lord's house this coming Sunday morning, okay? Father, I thank you for a good night. I ask you to bless our folks now. Give them mercy as they travel. Bless those that could not be here. And I pray, Lord, that this Sunday we'd have more back. And I pray that we would have no problems with this corona. So I pray, Father, that you'd be honored with this church. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. God bless you.